Okay, dear Dhamma friends, we are going to start the Sutta teaching session. First of all, we pay homage to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Upayo bhikkave avimutto anupayo vimutto ti. Dear Dhamma friends, as you all can remember, we were discussing Pottapada Sutta, which was in Digha Nikaya, one of the interesting sutta discussing very important teachings of the Buddha's teaching. And there was a request that how to go through the Vipassana practice in order to touch the cessation, because we discussed how to touch cessation through Samatha practice while we were discussing Pottapada Sutta. And therefore, I thought of selecting one sutta available in the Khanda Samyutta. That means in the Samyutta Nikaya, the section dealing with the aggregates, which is called Khanda Samyutta. And there are talking on the engagement. Literally, upaya, the term Pali term upaya literally means engagement, engaging. And in this particular sutta, Buddha gives us a very interesting account of how consciousness actually depends on the other four aggregates. So in this sutta, Buddha mentioned the very first statement, which I have actually mentioned to you as the title, because one who is engaged is unliberated, one who is disengaged is liberated. So in Pali it is mentioned, upayo bhikkave avimutto anupayo vimutto. Upayo bhikkave avimutto, whenever someone is engaged. So this is not an engagement with your, say, partner or someone. This is basically, that's also could be, you can, if you like, you can put there as well. So once you are engaged, you can't get away. Now you are fully bound. Anyway, similarly, here also, when someone is engaged, particularly when the consciousness is engaged, then it is not liberated. And on the other hand, when the consciousness is not engaged at all, basically disengaged, then Buddha mentioned that consciousness is liberated. Now, that is a very interesting theme for the whole sutta, where we need to understand whenever mind is associating something, whenever mind is engaged with something, hooked up with something, grasping something, that basically means our consciousness is grasping any of these four aggregates. So that is the information that we are going to discuss today. So Buddha mentioned here, consciousness bhikkhus, while standing, might stand engaged with form, based upon form, established upon form. With a sprinkling of delight, it might come to growth, increase and expansion. Now this is how consciousness actually takes its life. So it can't alone exist. So it basically has to attach with one of the four aggregates. Now I have read about the form aggregate. So there Buddha mentioned, when consciousness needs to establish, it may either establish or engage with the form, that is the rupa, and then based upon form, and establish upon form. Now form is the very much the base, the assistance, the pedestal for consciousness to stand. And not only that, while doing so, so it is experiencing some sort of a delight, sprinkling of delight. So some sort of delight is there, that's why consciousness is habituated to attach to the form, engage with the form, stand on the form. And once it is established there, so basically it is started to grow. So it come to growth, increase and expansion. So assume like, it's very much like say, an octopus is simply putting one of its leg to a particular place, and slowly the all other legs are being brought there and firmly established in a particular place. So similarly, here also, the consciousness starts its very root, very kind of a slight engagement with the form, and slowly it grows there, it deepens its establishment, and properly establish itself there. Now, it is very firmly established at the form. Now, similarly, Buddha mentioned, either it may standing or engage with or based upon the feeling, the Vedana. So similarly, once it is attached to the feeling, engage with the feeling, standing on the feeling, it starts to grow, it starts to increase, and it starts to expand, and again at the same time experiencing some delight. Similarly, Buddha mentioned, engage with perception. Whenever consciousness we need to engage, it may engage with perception. It stands on perception. And it might, based upon perception, various signs. And so once engaged there, so it starts to grow, it starts to expand, it starts to increase. So that is how the growing, the maintenance, the sustenance of the consciousness happen. And doing so, it is experiencing some form of delight. And again, Buddha mentioned about the sankhara, the formations. There Buddha mentioned, engage with volitional formations. The consciousness is based upon and establish upon volitional formations and stand upon volitional formations. And while doing so, it starts to grow, it starts to increase, it starts to expand, and at the same time, experiencing sprinkling of delight. Now, you can see here the consciousness in that sense always needs something to stand upon at this level. So, there is a kind of a delight also available. And there's a grasping, there is stand upon, there is engagement attached to either to a form, either to the feeling, either to the perception, or to a volitional formation. So if I reiterate, so any of the other aggregates are required for consciousness to live, consciousness to thrive, consciousness to exist. So without it, so basically it's very much like it can't exist. Now here we can understand, so we are talking here about the conditioned consciousness, sankata vijnana, where some sort of a dependency is always available. Either it depends on the form, either it depends on feeling, either it depends on perception, or either it depends on the mental formation, so the volitional formations. So this is the conditioned consciousness. It's always conditioned, always based on something, always standing on something, always depending on something. And now Buddha firmly mentioned another statement here. If someone might say, apart from form, apart from feeling, apart from perception, apart from volitional formation, I will make known the coming and going of consciousness, its passing away and rebirth, its growth, increase and expansion, that is impossible. Now here, when we consider the conditioned consciousness, so that indicates it has certain properties. It has a property of arising, it has a property of growing, establishing, firmly engaged with things, and increasing, expanding, so and ultimately it starts to fade away. So this is a kind of a typical lifespan consciousness may go through. And it may happen using a form, it may happen using a feeling, it may happen using a perception, or either it may happen using a mental formation. Now Buddha, another statement he mentioned, apart from these four, if someone is telling that I am going to show you an arising of consciousness, establishing of consciousness, grasping of consciousness, or it's increasing expansion of consciousness, growing, then such is not possible. So that is basically very much like confirming what Buddha has earlier mentioned. So there can't be any other another way of existence for a conditioned consciousness, dependent consciousness, without these four states, without these four aggregates. So that means whenever a new consciousness arises, whenever consciousness want to grow, want to increase, want to expand, either it has to get some strength, some support, either from the form, either from the feeling, either from the perception, or either from the mental formations. So they are very much like interrelated. They are depending on each other. Now, another point I want to highlight here is why this kind of an engagement happen. Why this kind of an attachment happen. Why this kind of standing upon happen. Why can't consciousness live without these four? Oh, that is being answered in another sutta, what we call Athiraga Sutta. That is where Buddha mentioned the reason is the craving. So till craving is available, the consciousness arises either based on form, feeling, perception, or mental formations. So the craving also play a pivotal role here. It is the reason why this kind of a behavior is available for the consciousness. So on the other hand, we can argue, if there is a methodology to remove this raga, to remove this greed, to remove this craving, then there's a possibility to completely avoid the arising of this kind of a conditioned consciousness. Now, Buddha mentioned here, bhikkhus, if a bhikkhu has abandoned lust for the form, with the abandoning of lust, the basis is cut off. There is no support for the establishing of consciousness. If he has abandoned lust for the feeling, so similarly he mentioned the other ones. Now, Buddha mentioned, if one is able to abandon lust for the form, then basically the consciousness doesn't get the food, doesn't get the establishment, doesn't get the pedestal, doesn't get the footing. So basically what happens is that basis is cut off, that engagement is cut off, that link is cut off. So then there is no support for the establishment of the consciousness. Now there was a friction, I can't remember whether it was in this English discussion or in the Sinhala discussion. Someone asked, basically we are seeing certain things, say various sights, sounds, etc. So does that mean that we are well established on those, say forms, on those sounds, smells, tastes, tactile sensations, are merely knowing them means that we are fully established on those. Now, according to this sutta, there is an additional requirement mentioned here. That is, when consciousness establishes on form, for example, then it starts to grow using that base, using that as a kind of a pedestal, as a kind of a stand. Then it starts growing, increasing, and expanding. So that means kind of a fulfillment has to happen, kind of an increase has to happen, expansion has to happen for the well-establishment of the consciousness. But on the other hand, if there is a way to maintain kind of a dispassionate mind, then that possibility is very much inhibited. Now say here, so Buddha mentioned when consciousness establishes on form, it also experiences some kind of a delight. That means kind of a delight is there, kind of a happiness is there, pleasure is there So automatically then there is a attachment, kind of a craving. So that indicates kind of a further food for the consciousness to grow. Ultimately, it's expand, grow, increase, and well establish. But on the other hand, if there is no delight, instead, if one has kind of a dispassionate attitude, what is available is not the passion, but dispassion. So certain requisites required for the establishment of the consciousness is not there. So basically, in that sense, if we are able to have kind of a attitude of dispassion, a background of dispassion, and on the other hand, available lust being suspended, kind of eradicated, at least temporary. It is not present now. Lust is not there, greed is not there, craving is not there. If so, that link is not possible to establish. If we consider only about the form, so then that means that particular link, attachment, engagement, footing, standing, so that is not there because that particular passion required for this whole process, desire or greed available for this whole process is not available. So how are we going to do that? So that is where the vipassana is coming into the picture. Now, when we are considering the form, actually, I thought of discussing this sutta considering four aggregates. Now, if we consider today the form aggregate, say the form aggregate indicates, so pataviya apo tejo vayo. That means the earth element, the water element, air element, and the heat element. So this is what we call as form. Now, actually, depending on the form, so we are making various perceptions and we think about it, and all sorts of other things are generating. But at the very root, what is available are these four elements. If you go really down, really deep to the root, actually, when these four elements are come together and prepare in a particular way, so we can see, okay, this is a male form, this is a female form, this is a inanimate form, this is an animate form. So likewise, various say parts are there, so to which we are giving names and we are coloring them, so it become more and more complicated. But if we go to the very essence, very root, what we get is nothing but these four elements. The whole physical world, according to the Buddha's teaching, we can very much like simplify with these four elements. And we can actually add even the space element if you like. So anyway, the great elements are the earth element, water element, fire element, and the air element. So how are we going to remove lust or greed or craving towards these forms? So that is where various vipassana techniques are available. Now, first of all, we need to understand where our mind is attached with. What are the types of forms that our mind get attached to? So that basically, we can further elaborate into another five categories, depending on our faculties. So there are various sights to which that we are attached with. And there are various sounds to which that we are attached with. And then there are various smells to which that we attach with. There are various tastes we are attached with. And again, various, what you call the tactile sensations we attach with. So likewise, the physical world is basically giving us kind of a footing to get attached with. Now we need to remove this attachment altogether as much as possible, then we need some kind of understanding. Because why we attach is because we have some sort of an ignorance. We don't know the real nature of these things. So that is why we go and attach. Now, if we are able to understand the realistic nature of these, then there is a possibility to at least to reduce the attachment, reduce the grasping. Now, various vipassana techniques, like say you are doing asubha bhavana, you are trying to understand the loathsome nature of various body parts. So that to some extent reduce the attachment towards the body, either to your body or to another one's body. And on the other hand, if you are dividing the whole body into various body parts, then you understand it is not a single unit, rather it's an assembly of various bodily parts. So that also helps to reduce a fair amount of greed. And on the other hand, if we go further, then we come across various element characteristics. So there are various element characteristics for the earth element, to the water element, to the air element, and to the fire element. So if we are practically understanding these characteristics, so that indicates actually to some sort of an understanding arise, wisdom arise, so that how these elements really behave. So you are now going to the more deeper levels, more subtle levels, refined levels, and trying to recognize their true behavior, true nature. So that also helps to remove a fair amount of attachment. And not only that, when we really see their impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, non-governable nature, anicca dukkha anatta, so that also severely helps us to arouse a fair amount of wisdom, that again helps us to cut off craving. So likewise, in the vipassana process, either when we are doing asubha bhavana, either we do, say, 32 parts of the body, either when we do elements meditation, or when we are even go through various postures and understand their impermanent nature. So likewise, whenever we do the rupa kammatthana, whatever the meditation techniques attached with the form, so there it helps us to reduce this passion or the greed. So that basically helps us to reduce what we call this attachment, grasping, this passion, greed, craving, whatever it is. Now, if it is not there, then there's a possibility, by the way, so that is the problem, even though you cut off the attachment towards the form, they still can have an attachment towards the feeling. They still can have attachment towards the perceptions. They still can have attachment towards the mental formations. So therefore, for a yogi to completely cut off all these four types of attachment, either to the form, perception, say feeling and mental formations, at the same time, concurrently cutting all these four, is not an easy job. So that requires a fair amount of concentration, so that assume that you are fully engaged with the kayanupassana, say elements meditation. So if you are able to maintain kind of a dispassion towards feelings, towards perceptions, towards mental formations, but only have kind of a investigative approach towards the form, so that means we can reasonably say we have only a kind of an attachment, kind of a link, only standing upon the form. All the other three are fairly weakened. So in case we are able to completely cut off the attachment towards the form, that indicates at the same time we have to some extent weakened the other attachments towards the feelings, perceptions, mental formations. So at the same time, therefore, there's a possibility that mind get completely disengaged, completely liberated. But still, it is very temporary. I mean, don't think that is a kind of a full-fledged, permanent liberation, but it's a temporary liberation. Now, assume that someone is doing Vedananupassana. Now, his investigation is more towards the what you call various feelings. And when he is sort of investigating various feelings, so that gives him fair understanding about their behavior, what different types of feelings are available, how vulnerable they are, how non-governable they are, and how unsatisfactory they are. So likewise, a fair amount of understanding is given through this Vedana Anupassana about the feelings. So slowly, so the attachment towards the feeling starts to fade away. Greed towards feelings start to fade away. Identification with feelings starts to fade away. So this actually helps to minimize that sprinkling of the desire, the delight. Instead, there's a kind of a dispassion arise. And again, the establishment become less and less, weaker and weaker. Standing upon the feeling aggregate become weaker and weaker. So similarly, there's a possibility for one to completely cut off that link between the consciousness and the feeling so that the consciousness become unestablished. So now we have talked about the feelings. Now, one important thing to remember here is that when we are minimizing the attachment towards the feeling, when we are weakening that link, when we are weakening that engagement, so we have to make sure the other establishments, that establishment to the form, establishment to the, say, perceptions, establishments to the mental formations also has to be minimized. So otherwise, even though we are able to minimize engagement towards these feelings, if we are well established on any of the other aggregates, that means vijnana, consciousness, has enough food, has enough place for its survival. And assume now we are going towards the perception aggregate and say even the mental formations aggregate. Suppose now we are doing say Chittanupassana or Dhammanupassana, where you are carefully trying to understand the mind. So various signs arise in the mind, mental images arise in the mind, and you are able to carefully look at it. So you have very good mindfulness, sharp mindfulness, and you are able to develop very good clear comprehension, so that even the slightest image, mental image appear in the mind is noticeable. So you can notice it easily. So typically what happens is whenever a slight image happens, so we don't stop there, we want to recognize it. Immediately we get some sort of feeling about it, and we start to think about it, and we are attribute a particular name to it, a color to it, a kind of a relationship to it. It's kind of, we are identifying with it, and we are personifying it, we are putting it to someone, to some person or something, and ultimately it become more complicated, more constructed, and we do series of preparations, and we are fully helping the consciousness to grow, the consciousness to well establish. So this is what we do. Actually, the very root is a very slight mental image, kind of a scar, kind of an image, kind of a sign, a mark. But we are the ones decorating it. We are the ones constructing it. We are the ones fabricating it. So more we fabricate, more we construct, more we add various other parts to it, so the consciousness start to properly grow, increase, expand, and well established. But on the other hand, if we are able to do the opposite, instead of constructing it, instead of preparing it, instead of fabricating on it, if we are able to minimize this fabrication, if we are able to have kind of a dispassionate attitude towards this mental image, this sign, this sanya, then in a way we are basically hindering that consciousness establishment process. Now, if we are doing so, if the mind basically has that capacity, then what happens is that slowly, what you call this consciousness food
the food for the consciousness become less and less. So hope you can look at this diagram. So this is very much the essence of this sutta. So if we are able to minimize the engagement, grasping, footing, or giving food towards perception, towards this whole process, then slowly we can see we are very much like disentangling, or we are deconstructing. We do some sort of a de-learning kind of a process, so that the consciousness does not get a footing on the various perceptions. Signs may come and go, but we are not giving any importance to them. We are not giving any emphasis to them. We know very well they are merely images. They are merely marks. They are merely mental images, various signs, various perceptions. And we do know their real nature, how they are impermanent, how they quickly come and go, how there is no essence to them. They are merely images. We know that they are mirage type of behavior. So if we have this wisdom, so that indicates they are not giving any chance for consciousness to establish based upon the images, upon the perceptions, the signs. So that also can be reduced in that sense. So that we need to do during the Chittanupassana or during the Dhammanupassana. So if we are carefully looking at our mind, so we get a proper chance, we get a fair chance to look at how these mental images are being given kind of a life, given kind of a life, how we add more importance to them, how we add value to them. So we are the ones actually giving more strength to them. Now if we are able to stop that, so they are sort of weaker by themselves. So they simply come and they simply go. So the mind becomes more and more spacious in that sense, because the signs are the ones occupying the mind. So they are coming and going and they are very much filling the mind. So that mind is completely crowded. But if we are slowly removing all these different signs, it's very much like you are expanding the mind and basically allowing its space to appear. It's very much like you are cleaning your house. Suppose your house is not clean for years, then various unnecessary things are there, bad smells are there, say all your different wrappers are there, all the covers are there of various items, because you consume things but you never swept them away. So various unnecessary things are there in your house. Suppose that one day you are cleaning it fully, so all unnecessary things they are throwing out. So everything is now keeping at their proper place. Now you have enough space in the house. It looks perfect now. It looks fairly spacious. Similarly, in our mind also, if we are able to remove all these different mental images, perceptions, signs, marks from our mind, then slowly mind has its capacity to become very much like luminous, to very much like transparent, to very much like spacious. So that is where we need to understand, when we are dealing with various perceptions, various images, mental, say, signs, rather than growing them, we have to allow them to fade away. So that indicates that the consciousness doesn't have a footing either in the perceptions, either in the signs or marks. Now, how about mental formations? Now, mental formations, volitions, are the area that we start to think. So there's a kind of a slight thought comes to the mind, and we add another thought to it. We add another thought to it. We add another thought to it, coming from either from the past to the future. So likewise, we start to weave thoughts. We do this kind of a construction using various thoughts. We are weaving thoughts. And we start to overthink. And ultimately, even to mentally proliferate. So that gives enough food for consciousness to establish. Actually, even a single thought is enough. But if we are not promoting it, if we are not giving value to it, if we are not adding more thoughts to it, then it may slowly fade away. It may quickly fade away, not slowly, quickly fade away. So that the chance for the consciousness to establish become less and less. Thoughts may come, it is very much like from the background, and they then disappear, but the consciousness doesn't have a kind of a footing to properly establish, well establish, to grow, to expand. So, I mean, just a single thought may not be enough for consciousness to properly expand, properly establish, properly thrive, properly grow. So a series of thoughts is required. We need to add more and more thoughts. But if in a way, if we are able to reduce this adding part, reduce this growing part, reduce this construction part, fabrication part, mental proliferation part, so that means thoughts become less and less, not much thinking, no much mental proliferation, and there is no any volitional formations. Ultimately, even that type of food is not given to the consciousness. So in a way, we can argue, therefore, there are four kinds of foods are there for the consciousness. Either we have to give food through the forms. Either we have to give foods through feelings. Either we have to give foods through perceptions, signs, mental images. Or either we have to give food through the mental formations, that is, thoughts. So if we are able to somehow minimize all this process, that means the consciousness cannot have a new establishment. It doesn't have the capacity to have a new base, new footing, new pedestal, new stage to stand upon. So basically, so we are doing this whole process during the whole vipassana practice. As I mentioned in the satipatthana practice, when you do the kayanupassana, so this is the area that we are dealing with. We are dealing with the form. So we are minimizing that attachment towards the form. We understand the real nature of the form. Similarly, when we are dealing with feeling, that the Vedanupassana, we look at various feelings from many different angles and we are trying to get a thorough understanding about the feeling. More we have a thorough understanding, less and less become the attachment. So the feelings become quickly fading away, so the consciousness is not given that type of food either. And when we are dealing with Cittanupassana and Dhammanupassana, so we are more and more understanding the intricacies of the mind, understanding the very subtle aspects of the mind, so we understand how a mental image appears, how a perception starts to grow, how various thoughts come and go, how we add towards them, how we start weaving thoughts. So likewise, the whole mechanism of the mind slowly become evident to us. So we minimize that whole process. We are not adding thoughts. We are not adding more and more mental images. We are not giving any value to mental images. So that means we are not giving food to the perception. We are not giving food to the formations, through the formations. And consciousness lose that food as well. So what would be the ultimate result? So Buddha mentioned here, when that consciousness is unestablished, not coming to growth, non-generative, it is liberated. So when consciousness become unestablished, apatittang, not coming to growth, that means avirulhang, not growing, non-generative, anabhisankhaccha, that means no constructions, vimuttang, liberated. By being liberated, it is steady. Why it is steady? Because there is nothing to attach. By being steady, it is content. By being content, he is not agitated. Now this is a very interesting point. So when consciousness is not established at any place, not on the form, not on the feelings, not on the mental formations, not on the perceptions, so there is no way to establish. Now it becomes unestablished. And whatever unestablished, whenever the mind is unestablished, with the very early statement he mentioned, it is liberated. Now the consciousness becomes liberated. And when it is liberated, it is unagitated. And then he personally attains Nibbana. So in that sense, so there is nothing to burn with. Because in order for consciousness to burn with, either it has to have lust, it has to have hatred, it has to have kind of a delusion. But now all that roots are being uprooted. As a result, so it is liberated and it is very much like calmed. It become peaceful. He understands, destroyed is birth, the whole life has been lived, what had to be done has been done. There is no more for this state of being. Now, that is actually where the complete liberation Buddha mentioned. But immediately, that kind of a complete liberation is not possible. Basically, that may be possible to a Paccheka Buddha or to a Samma Sambuddha, because the stages quickly happens. Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami, Arihat, so those four stages quickly happens. But to the others, actually this happens in a kind of a stepwise process. So the attachment towards these aggregates become less and less, to the level that attachment has minimized. So we can say, okay, he doesn't have attachment towards the gross forms now, gross feelings now, gross perceptions now, gross mental formations now. But still he may have attachment towards refined forms, refined feelings, refined perceptions, refined mental formations. Suppose another person further improve, and he even doesn't have attachment towards these refined states. But he may still have certain attachment towards even very subtle forms, or even very subtle perceptions, very subtle mental formations. So likewise, it's a kind of a gradual process how one may minimize one's attachment. Now, certain very gross kind of forms are there to which now the person doesn't have kind of an attachment. But to certain other subtle forms, there could have a kind of an attachment. Similarly, there may be gross kind of feelings that the person may not attach, but there may be a very slight refined feelings, still one may get attached. So likewise, this reducing process is kind of a gradual process. We can't quickly have from 1000 to 0 type of immediate reduction. Rather, it may grow from 1000 to 999, 998, 997. So likewise, it may is a kind of a slow, gradual reduction process. So when consciousness is not established, what does it mean? So that basically means, so there is no coming and going. There is no arising and passing away. So this particular level of consciousness, what we call as unestablished consciousness, that means appatitthita vijnana, doesn't show any coming and going. Because if there is kind of coming and going, that means still it is conditioned. Still it is sankata. But when this consciousness become unestablished, so it basically show, does not show coming and going, arising and passing away, birth and decay. It can't show. If there is a birth and decay, so that means it either has to establish using form or feeling, perception, formations. So that is the conditioned consciousness, sankata vijnana. But when the consciousness become fully unestablished, so it is not established in the form, feeling, perception, formations. So nowhere for it to grow. So there is no coming and going. It becomes unconditioned. It becomes not established. That is where Buddha mentioned a term called appatitthita vijnana, unestablished consciousness. Anidassana vijnana, unmanifested consciousness. So this is another level that we have to explore. So what is this unestablished consciousness? What are the properties? What are the other characteristics? Etc. Actually, we can further discuss using other suttas. But today, actually, I want to highlight the whole vipassana process using this Upaya Sutta. Buddha very briefly but precisely, with more sort of technical terms, Buddha has shown in this Upaya Sutta. And with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. I hope that you have some questions to discuss. So with that, I hope to conclude today's sutta teaching session. If you have any questions, you can raise your hand.